So you may open your Bibles then to the book of Habakkuk. The book of Habakkuk. Some people would say Habakkuk. Habakkuk. Let's bow our heads right now and let's go to the Lord in prayer and we'll begin our study. Brother Glenn, would you lead us in prayer this morning? Thank you, brother. Last Sunday, if you remember, we began a series of three studies in this Old Testament book of Habakkuk. And the reason we did this is because, for a couple weeks, we're just focusing on our nation. And of course, today's July 3rd, tomorrow's July 4th. So we're focusing on our nation, the challenges that we face as Christians, living in a nation that we see very clearly is moving further and further and further away from God. And so we're looking at this minor prophet, this prophet by the name of Habakkuk. And Habakkuk has very much to say about his own nation, about his own life, and his response to God in a very difficult time in his life and in the life of the nation. So last week in our study, we looked at Habakkuk chapter 1, verses 1 through 11. And if you remember, we said that Habakkuk was facing some important problems, and he puts them in the form of questions. For example, one problem was that the nation of Judah was living in sin and rebellion against God, and Habakkuk just couldn't understand why God let them do that. In other words, God, why? Why are you letting your people rebel against you and move away from you? Why, God, are you doing that? A second problem and a second question that he asked and he struggled with was this, that when God answered his prayer, God told him that the Chaldeans or the Babylonians were going to come in and they were going to crush Judah. That God would actually use these sinful, wicked people, the Chaldeans, to come in and discipline and correct and judge his own people. And Habakkuk struggled with that. As a matter of fact, God even said to him in a way, and I'll put it in my own words, Habakkuk, things are not going to get better, they're going to get worse. And so we get into the mind of the prophet and we begin to just get a glimpse of what he's struggling with. And one reason that I was drawn to this book is this, that folks, we have the same struggles. God, why are you letting our nation move in this direction? God, why are you letting wickedness and evil and all these movements against you, why, God, are you letting this take place? And so we begin to understand and begin to see the words of Habakkuk. We see a connection. We see a connection in our own lives and in the life of our nation. We learned some things about God last week. We learned that His ways are mysterious, His ways are misunderstood, and His ways are always moral. And so Habakkuk is working through these issues and these problems and these questions that he has. And we need to do the same thing. I mean, how does God fit in with what's happening in our world today? And why doesn't He deal with the sin and wickedness? And why doesn't God do something? See, these are questions. If you're a thinking Christian, and I pray that you're also a trusting Christian, there are answers. And yet, these are questions that we ask ourselves. So go now to verse 12 of chapter 1. Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 12, because he begins arriving at an answer. And so the question then before us today is, well, how did he respond to God? And how should we respond to God? I want you to notice, first of all, that Habakkuk turns his focus toward God. We're in chapter 1. Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 12. He turns his focus toward God. When Habakkuk couldn't answer the problem, when he couldn't answer the question, then what I want you to see is that he backs off. He steps back. I mean, these are big questions. These are serious questions now going through his mind as he looks at himself and he looks at the nation, and he backs off. He steps back as he looks at the situation and as he works through these questions in his mind. What that means, I believe, is this, that instead of trying to answer something that he doesn't know, he backs up and he begins to consider the truths that he does know. And folks, there's help there for us. There's truth there that will help us as we look at our lives today and we look at our society today and we look at our nation today. There's truth there that will help us. It's like Habakkuk says, if I start with what I know about God, then perhaps I can come to a conclusion about what I don't know. So he steps back, he backs up, and that's where we find him here in verse 12 of chapter 1. Now, what does he know about God? Look what he says. First of all, he knows that God is eternal. Look what he says in verse 12. He says, are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God? Are you not from everlasting? See, this he knows. It's the first thing he knows. As a matter of fact, as we get just a glimpse of how his mind is working here, because he's now thinking about God. He's put his focus on God. And oh, folks, when we face challenges, when we face questions, when we face problems in our lives, our individual lives, or even in society or in culture, in our nation, what a truth for us from Habakkuk, that we step back and we turn our focus to God. And we begin to understand and we begin to consider what we know about God. And this will help us and this will encourage us. First of all, he knows that God is eternal. God is very different than the Chaldean gods. Go back to verse 11. Someone read verse 11 for us. Read it loud so everyone can hear. What's he say in verse 11?
Then shall his mind change, and he shall pass over and offend, imputing this, his power, unto his God.
Okay, so what that is, we're just jumping into the context. We touched on this last week, is that when the Chaldeans come in and they begin to conquer these nations and they come into Judah, they will ascribe everything that they do to the power of their God. And so Habakkuk touches on that in verse 11, ascribing the power to his God. That's what the Chaldeans would do. Our God's helping us defeat these nations. Our God helps us defeat Assyria. Our God helps us defeat Egypt. And our God will help us defeat Judah. And so they ascribe all that to their God. And that then gets Habakkuk thinking about the one true God, his God, Jehovah. And he acknowledges that he is eternal. He's not like the gods of the Chaldeans. He's eternal. He's everlasting. And so he's thinking, now this I know, my God is eternal. He is from eternity to eternity. Now let's stop here for a moment. And first of all, let's ask this question. How would that truth encourage Habakkuk, that God is eternal? How would that encourage him? Think about his circumstances. Think about the situation he's in. How would that be an encouragement to him, that God is eternal? Go ahead. Okay.
And so that with the big picture, this is temporary, this is small in the big picture.
Yes, that would definitely be an encouragement. What else? My God is eternal. God, you're eternal. You're from everlasting to everlasting. How would that be an encouragement to him? So yes, he gets the big picture. What else? That's right. He's not going to run away. He's not going to leave us because he's eternal. He's from everlasting to everlasting. What else? Did I hear someone else? Okay, so all powerful, I mean, pointing to his eternality and even pointing to his power. Absolutely. Do you see what he does? He's focusing his attention on God. What happens sometimes, as a matter of fact, let me say it this way. What happens many times when we face difficult situations and circumstances, where does our look go in the midst of trouble and problems and suffering? Where does our look normally go first of all? Okay, it goes to the trouble. We look at the circumstances, or it goes to us. See, and that's part of the same thing. We look at ourselves. We look at the situation itself. You see what Habakkuk's doing? He is facing a terrible situation in his life and in the life of the nation. And the first thing he does, he turns his focus on God. And he says, God is eternal. My God is eternal. My God is outside. Now, this is the way I'm thinking through this. My God is outside the flow of history. My God is before history. He's over history. He controls history. He reigns in eternity. He's not subject to anything or anyone. So whatever is going on, now I'm making this personal, whatever's going on in our nation, whatever's going on in our society, we can stand back just like the prophet Habakkuk, and we can say, my God was there before it started, and my God will be there when it's over. He is from eternity to eternity. And that encouraged Habakkuk. Now, see, we can look at that in the light of the nation, but we can also bring that down to a personal level, because whatever you're facing in your personal life as a Christian, whatever trouble, whatever difficulties you might be facing, think about how you can be encouraged about the eternality of God. God is eternal. Yes.
Doesn't it appear as though he's questioning the God of eternity? In his very question, I mean, he started off questioning God, how could you allow what's going on to happen, even though he knows that God is from eternity? And then when God says what he's going to do, now it seems like he's questioning God again.
Yeah, and see, and I don't think we should see it that way. I think we should see it as a response. He does have the questions, and the questions are real, and the situation is real, but this is how he responds. God, and you'll see it as we move further here. God, you're eternal. In other words, see, when he begins to work his way through who God is, you know what happens in his heart? It begins to build up a confidence and a trust that in whatever God does, he can trust him. And we'll see that as we work further in the passage. So there's a second truth. Not only is God eternal, but here's the second one. God is self-existent. God is self-existent. Now, where do we see that? Look at verse 12. Look at verse 12. Because notice that in verse 12, that Habakkuk uses the name Yahweh or Jehovah twice. Twice in that verse. Yahweh, Jehovah. Now, what's that mean? What's the name Yahweh or the name Jehovah? What's it mean? What's it mean? What's the literal translation of Jehovah or Yahweh? What's it mean? Okay, that's a different name. What's it mean? When God gave his name to Moses, I am. Or as some translations say, I am that I am. So when we even begin to think about his name, and Habakkuk uses it twice, and see, this moves us in this direction now that he has his eyes on God. He has his focus on God. Folks, I think it's hard for us to imagine the situation he's facing. When you think about the Assyrians coming down, or the Babylonians coming down, and realizing what will happen, and the prophets and the people of Judah knowing who the Babylonians are and what they face, I think it's really hard for us to put ourselves in that condition, put ourselves in that situation. And yet, he says, not only is God eternal, but God is self-existent. I am. Someone said it means I am, period. That's it. I am. And so it's a statement of the absolute self-existence of God. Now, you know, we could stop there. You know, it's kind of lofty. God is I am. He is the self-existent one. But how do we bring that down to our understanding? What's that mean? What's it mean that when God says, I am that I am?
He always was. He is everywhere.
Okay, so he always was. He always will be. Okay, good. What else? I am. Okay, good. Okay, so creation then is outside of him. I mean, he made everything, but it's outside of him. He is separate from that. I am that I am. What else?
If I look to God and see even things that I don't fully understand, I am so glad because He understands. It means He understands, He knows, He's in control, He's bigger than me, He's not as I imagine me, He's not a God like the Chaldeans.
Yes.
That He is great.
Yes, yes. Okay, good. See, oh, yes, go ahead, Bernard. God is. Okay. 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 Yes, absolutely. God is. I am. I am. A way to think of, put everything that you've said together, He is dependent on nothing. Now, take it just for a moment and think about how that compares to us. Because actually, we don't admit this, but we're totally dependent all the time on others. We don't think we are, but we are. And we're absolutely totally dependent upon God. But He is dependent on nothing. He is outside of everything, but yet at His own choice and by His grace, He moves into the life of His creation, into the lives of people, and all that He's made. He is self-existent. How would that be an encouragement to Habakkuk that God is self-existent? How would that encourage him? Okay, I've given you 30 seconds. That's all I can give you. Okay? All right. And we're talking about big truth here, but I want you to think about this. God is not influenced. He is being independent or not dependent on anything. He's not moved by circumstances, situations, kingdoms, people. I mean, he willingly places himself in those, but yet He's not pulled by the winds of situations and circumstances. As a matter of fact, in that same verse, Habakkuk gives him another name. He gives him a title. Look at the verse. What does he call him? Okay, all right, we're gonna look at that. He calls him the Holy One, but there's a name. There's a title. Rock. He calls him the Rock. Now, what picture does that bring to your mind? The Rock. Immovable, solid, steady, dependable. You see, the self-existent one, he's like that. What an encouragement to this prophet. Now get this now. This prophet whose world is about to turn upside down. And there's a rock in his life. It's God, and he's eternal, and he's self-existent. Let's keep going. There's a, he's not through. So there's a third truth. He knows something else about God. Now, don't lose the big picture now, because he's had these big questions and he's trying to get these answers, and he really can't get the answers. And so he's dealing with what he knows. And what he knows about God, folks, is amazing beyond measure, and actually begins to move him to the answer or to the struggle within his own heart. Notice now, verse 12, God is eternal, God is self-existent, and then he says God is the Holy One. He is the Holy One. This is crucial. He not only knows of God's eternal existence, and he knows of God's self-determined existence, but he is also sure of the utter, absolute, perfect righteousness and holiness of God. Now let's stop there for a moment. The Holy One. How would that be an encouragement to Habakkuk? How would that encourage him that God is holy? He is separate. He is righteous. He is perfect in this holiness. How would that encourage him? Okay, so Sandra's on a roll here. Okay, yes, and that's true. That's true. Think about it, he's holy. Now, what's one of his struggles? What's going through his mind? Why would he struggle with the holiness of God?
Yes.
Tell me why.
Because of what's going on with the people. He has been judging.
That's right. Oh, well, he's about to.
But he hasn't.
Okay, he yep, he's about to. God's about to judge, and yet even the questions he's asked, God, why have you let wickedness control the nation? See, he struggles with that. And this one's even bigger, because he brings this up later in the book. God, how could you use this wicked, evil people to judge us, your people?
Yeah.
So see, he struggles with this whole thought of holiness, but here's his conclusion. He calls God the Holy One. Now, then with all that, how would that be an encouragement to him? Go ahead. Okay. So it's real, isn't it? The wickedness in Judah is real, and the wickedness of the Chaldeans is real, and yet he makes this statement and he calls him the Holy One. Bernard? Okay. Okay. He does, and we're even going to see that even clearer in another statement, but he does. He does have a purpose. But now think about it. Rose, did you have a comment?
I just want to say his righteousness and sovereignty will ultimately prevail the situation.
Yes, and we'll see that in another statement he makes. So yes, you're on target here, looking at his sovereignty. But think about this now. Sandra, go ahead. Yes. Now, yep. So did you hear Sandra? She said, he is right. He's right. And get this now. When Habakkuk calls him the Holy One, he's acknowledging that God will always do what's right. Always. And even, now get this. You're just going to have to hold on this, because we don't have time to get here, but you're going to have to hold on to this. Even when he uses wickedness, and even when he uses evil, and even when that's a part of his plan, Habakkuk calls him the Holy One. He is always righteous and always holy. And folks, you really begin to think through that, that can really swell up a confidence and a reliance in your heart to God, because he will always do what's right. Always. Now, make it personal. See, that means whatever's taking place in your life or my life right now, where wickedness is involved and evil is involved, God will always do what's right. And someone said, maybe a couple people said, but you know, when you look at the end, when you look at the end of this, God brings it all together. He brings it all together. And you're going to even see that with Habakkuk. He realizes that. He understands that. I better move on. We're going to run out of time. Look at the next. Look at the middle of verse 12. He's not through. He says, O Lord, you have appointed them for judgment, O rock. You have marked them for correction. So notice now that Habakkuk acknowledges the sovereign purpose and the control of God. See, you've already touched on that, but here it is. Here's the sovereign purpose and control of God. God is over all. He purposes, He plans, and He has the power to carry it out. Folks, not one thing happens in this world outside His sovereign purpose and plan. And whatever happens takes place by His sovereign purpose and power. And so here's Habakkuk acknowledging this. Not one thing can happen that God couldn't stop. And not one thing can happen that He did not purpose and plan. And oh, the depths of that truth actually cause our minds to just whirl. And we ask ourselves, how can this be? But this is God. And how does that encourage Habakkuk? I think you've already touched on it. God's sovereign. He controls. His purpose is taking place. And Habakkuk is encouraged by this truth that God is controlling this whole situation and God rules. And folks, that can be an encouragement to us also. Here's one more thing, right in the middle of verse 12. Notice he makes this statement. He says, we shall not die. Now that's a peculiar statement. We shall not die. I mean, how could he make that statement when he knows that the Babylonians are coming down and the Babylonians kill people? The Babylonians kill kingdoms. They wipe out whole nations. That's what the Babylonians do. And he says in this statement, remember now, he's focusing on God, then he says, we shall not die. See, I submit to you that Habakkuk knew something else about God. He knew that God was eternal, and he knew that God was self-existent, and he knew that God was holy, and he knew that God was sovereign. And I think when he makes this statement, he knows that God is faithful. He's faithful. And Brother David, I heard you say lightly. What did you say? He is a covenant-keeping God. And brothers and sisters, He had already made promises to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And He had made promises to David. And even though this nation of Judah was facing destruction and devastation, get this now, not all of God's people would be destroyed. Not all. Many. But not all. And he makes this statement and he says, we shall not die. They would not pass out of existence because God is a faithful God. And when God made that promise to the fathers, and when God made that promise to David, and when that promise was repeated over and over and over again, He said it, He confirmed it many times, and folks, when God makes a promise, you can bank on it. You can bank on it. And Habakkuk was banking on it. We shall not die. God is a faithful covenant-keeping God. Now, so let's step back a moment. Do you see how Habakkuk then faced this problem and these questions? I mean, these were huge questions, and this was a serious situation. And here's what he did. He began to look at God. He began to take the truth that he knew about God, and he began to apply it, to bring it before his thoughts and consideration. Folks, this is practical. This is what we have to do. When we face those situations and problems and difficulties and tragedies, then instead of looking at the situation and the circumstances and ourselves and letting that control us, what should we do? We should follow the pattern of Habakkuk. We should look at God. And we should consider who God is and what He's like. He's eternal. He's self-existent. He's holy. He's sovereign. He's faithful. And when we plant our feet on the solid rock of these truths, folks, we can look at life differently and our lives will be different. See, God's Word will change us. Now, there's a second response. Habakkuk, he's still struggling with these Chaldeans. And so we move into chapter 2. And you have to understand what a struggle that would be. That here are the people of God. God has made these promises and God has done these things for Israel and for Judah. And yet here are these wicked, sinful people that will come in and destroy God's people. And Habakkuk, he's struggling with that. God, how can you use these wicked Babylonians to punish us? I mean, they're worse than we are. How could a holy God use such an unholy instrument to accomplish His purpose? Look at verse 13. So follow, and I'll read a few verses here. He says, he's talking about God here, and he says, or talking to God, he says, "You are of purer eyes than to behold evil, and cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours a person more righteous than he? Why do you make men like fish of the sea, like creeping things that have no ruler over them? They take up all of them with a hook. They catch them in their net and gather them in their dragnet, and therefore they rejoice and are glad. And therefore they sacrifice to their net and burn incense to their dragnet, because by them their share is sumptuous and their food plentiful. Shall they therefore empty their net and continue to slay nations without pity?" Do you see his struggle?
Yes, indeed.
See his struggle? What a struggle. See, the whole idea that God is using these wicked Babylonians to punish God's sinful people. And the Babylonians are worse than God's people in many respects. "And God, I know you're holy and you hate sin and you can't do evil. So I don't know why, God, that you'd use these Babylonians to do this." Look at verse 17. He says, "Shall they therefore empty their net and continue to slay nations without pity? What will you do about this, God?" Now look at his response. Look at Habakkuk's response. See, we're getting into his mind. We're seeing how he's thinking here. And there's much to learn here. Remember, step one in responding to problems and challenges of living in a sinful world and in a sinful nation is this: step back and focus on God. We've seen that. Second thing, clear and simple, here it is: wait on God. Wait on God. Look at verse 1, chapter 2, verse 1. He says, "I will stand my watch and set myself on the rampart and watch to see what he will say to me and what I will answer when I'm corrected." Every time I look at that, I have to smile, because, again, we're getting right into Habakkuk's heart here. And yet, let's take the big picture first. It's like he says, "God, I'm going to stand here and I'm going to set myself up on this tower and I'm going to wait until I see your answer. I'm going to wait, God. I have a lot of questions, and I know who you are, and I know what you're like, and I have a lot of questions, and I'm just going to wait on you. I'm going to stand here and wait for your answer. You see, Habakkuk acknowledges that God has the answer, and he will wait on him. Folks, I say this morning, that's a second practical truth for us, that we must wait on God. We wait on him. Now, let me ask this. Why is it so hard to wait on God? The hard issue is we don't really trust God. And frankly, folks, that's what it comes down to. We don't trust him. We put our trust in other things, don't we? We put our trust in our own wisdom. We put our trust in our own resources. We put our trust in what the world tells us. We just go down through the list. We put our trust in all these things, and the message of the Bible from beginning to end is God saying this to his people: trust me. Trust me. And so we struggle with waiting on God. We have some things here to learn from Habakkuk. He steps back and he watches, and essentially he's saying, God, I'm going to wait on you. I'm going to watch and I'm going to wait to see how you answer. Now, I'm going to make short of this because of our time. But here's God's answer. Look at verse 4. Behold the proud. His soul is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith. Behold the proud. The proud person does not wait on God. The proud person will trust himself. Now, let's be clear here. There is not a person in this room today that does not struggle with what we've just said. Because there is this inner part of us, actually it's the sin nature part of us, that moves us to trust ourselves, to go our own way, to do what we want when we want to do it. And yet the proud person trusts in himself, the proud person takes things into his own hands, the proud person depends on his own resources and his own way, the proud person is not a righteous person. Here, behold the proud. His soul is not upright in him. You see, the proud person trusts in himself and he ignores God and rejects God and goes his own way, and his soul is not upright in him. But then Habakkuk writes, but the just shall live by faith. By faith. The just shall trust God and depend upon God. The just shall live by a confidence and a dependence on God and what God has said. The just shall live by faith. Now, let's bring this down to the real big picture with the few minutes we have. That's really the whole issue. Do you know why Judah was facing the judgment of God and the discipline of God? Do you know why they were facing that? They were proud people. They had rejected God. They had not trusted God. Do you know why the Babylonians later would be completely destroyed by God? Because they were proud people. They had rejected God. They'd gone their own way. And yet, that's the proud person. And opposed to that, or opposite of that, is the trusting person. The person who will trust God and depend upon God. And by the way, how does that work in our lives? How do we trust God? How do you know if you're a person who lives by faith? What's the basis of faith? How do we know if we have faith? I mean, you can say today, I have faith, but what's the test of that? What's the proof of your faith? Because faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word of God. You see, and that's what the issue was with Judah. They had rejected the Word of God. They had disobeyed God's Word. They had turned against him and his word. You can't separate that. And so he says, the just shall live by faith. That was the real issue. That was the big picture. Now, I'm going to end with verse 14 and verse 20. Because God will, as you're looking at that, God will judge the wicked, and God will set things straight, and God will do what is right, and God will judge the Chaldeans, and folks, He will judge the wickedness and the evil in our nation. Mark it down. Mark it down. He will judge the sin and the wickedness in our nation. And when He does it, is entirely up to Him. When He does it, is entirely up to Him. But we must trust Him. See, this is what God was saying to Habakkuk. Trust me, Habakkuk. The wicked will be judged. Babylon will be judged. Trust me. Depend upon me. That's the message of this book. And after this judgment, we see the plan of God. He will judge the wicked. He will save His people. What a statement. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. There's coming a future time when the proud will be put down. There's coming a future time when the wicked will be put down. And the earth will be filled, not with wickedness, but with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And verse 20, look what he says. But the Lord is in His holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before Him. The righteous, the just, those who know God will live by faith. That's the middle section of the book of Habakkuk. In our worship service, we'll look at chapter 3 this morning. Let's bow our heads. Thanks for coming this morning.